B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
I do have to tell you, before we ask the hot button question here that Jalen Mills did introduce, you are listening to 97.5 The Fanatic, WPEN, Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity studio only from Comcast. Jalen Mills talked about the guy he's going to be replacing, and we've just broken it down a little bit for you. But he goes into a little bit more detail when he was talking to John Clark about what it means to take over for a guy like Malcolm Jenkins. Here's Jalen Mills on that.
I had a conversation with Mal, just thanking him for everything, showing me how to be a leader through the good and bad times that we had on our teams, not meeting up to our expectations, and then also just communicating with guys around the locker room, his work ethic. That's always, that's going to be big, bro, forever. His name holds weight. He's a Philly icon, Philly legend. I feel like his jersey should probably get retired there. And as far as people saying that, I know for sure it's going to be a really, really big target on my back.
Jalen Mills, you know, tipping his cap to his former teammate, his brother, as he said, Malcolm Jenkins, and trying to do a lot of the things that he did in this defense. But the question's right there. Number retired. His number should be retired. 6 years. I believe of all the guys at the Eagles whose numbers are retired, according to their media guy, just to verify it for people, Donovan's one of them, Steve Van Buren, Dawkins, Tommy Brookshire, Pete Retzlaff, Chuck Bednarik, Reggie White, Jerome Brown, Al Wistert as well. Do you think Malcolm Jenkins belongs in that category? Now, I will say this. I believe out of all those names, Jerome Brown, for obvious reasons, his unfortunate passing, only 6 years Malcolm Jenkins played here. But in that time, we know the accomplishments, especially winning a Super Bowl, what a leader he was and all that. Should Malcolm Jenkins' number be retired by the Philadelphia Eagles? I'll start it off. I'll jump on it first. I say yes. His number should be retired. Number 27 should be up there in that Ring of Honor as a retired number. Not just Ring of Honor, but a retired number. For the same reasons I'll talk about Nick Foles as one of the greatest to ever play for the Eagles, it's because they achieved the greatness. They achieved the ultimate goal of winning a Super Bowl. And that maybe doesn't put him in the Hall of Fame, but it certainly puts him up there as one of the greatest ever to play for this team, especially with what he did in that Super Bowl by that aggressive hit on Brandon Cooks, knocking him out of that game, and how he played overall throughout that entire run and his entire tenure as a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. I no question say Malcolm Jenkins' number should be retired. Trey, they should retire 72 first, but do you think they should retire Malcolm Jenkins' number?
No.
Why wouldn't you?
Short amount of time that he's been here, 6 years. You know, the numbers that have been retired on this squad right now, you have, you look at the body of work of Brian Dawkins, look at the body of work of McNabb, look at the body of work of Reggie White, Jerome Brown, even though Jerome Brown was a short time here with his tragic end. But the other numbers that have been retired here has had a longer body of work. Yeah, he won the Super Bowl, but are you going to retire the number? Everybody that won the Super Bowl on that team. I mean, when you look at the only numbers that I see that's going to be retired on that squad there is going to be Jason Peters.
Jason Peters, the only, and he didn't even play in the Super Bowl, but still Hall of Fame career.
Hall of Fame career. Retire.
Yeah.
But he played here 11 years, I believe. How many years was Jason Peters here? I believe 11 years. So, I mean, you know, I think that with however many Pro Bowls under his belt as an Eagle as well. So I think that his number will probably be retired off of that squad. But I don't know if Malcolm Jenkins was here long enough to have his number retired.
Mm-hmm. All right, Bobby, who are you going? Are you going yes or no, retire his number?
Yeah, I agree with Trey. I go no. I don't throw superstar that label out there, you know, nonchalantly. I don't retire numbers. Not that you wouldn't have the conversation, but no. Yeah, he was on a Super Bowl winning team. He was also part of a defensive backfield that Tom Brady threw for 511 yards on in that game, let's not forget. But no, I'm not putting down Malcolm Jenkins' career at all, but I do not think it's jersey retirement worthy. I mean, the same way I don't think Nick Foles is the greatest Eagles quarterback of all time. Yeah, they were part of a group that did something tremendous and only once in this city's history, but I don't think that elevates him to retired jersey worthy.
Mm-hmm. Jamie, who do you retire? Do you retire his number or not?
No, actually, I don't either. I was kind of surprised to hear you say that you would. I just don't think 6 years is enough time of service to, you know, just retire a number for good. He'll never be forgotten. He's a hero. Yeah, yeah, yada. But no, I Ring of Honor him, but I'm not retiring the number.
So who from that class gets retired? Because the only people, when I talk about class, I talk about the Super Bowl team. Because you need to have some kind of representation. Like, it's crazy to look back to go to another sport. It's crazy to look back on baseball and the era that the Phillies gave us, right?
Mm-hmm.
What Hall of Famer do you have in that group?
Well, I would imagine in time, Fletcher Cox will be. I think Trey's right. Mm-hmm. Jason Peters is deserving of that. But those are probably the only two guys from those teams.
Jason Kelsey?
Ertz might as well. I mean, he's going to be one of the franchise's best all-time tight end.
Yeah, possibly Ertz.
But yeah, it's probably those guys only.
When you think about Ertz, though, here's the interesting thing. At the time they won the Super Bowl, I mean, Ertz was a great tight end. He is a great tight end. He's still adding on to his career. Yeah, he's got a great shot at the Hall of Fame, no question. But at the time they won the Super Bowl, you think about one of the guys that galvanized, not one of the guy that galvanized the locker room the most, and that's Malcolm Jenkins. He was a guy that was the first guy in the locker room after you knew Carson Wentz wasn't coming back to say, yeah, who the hell cares? We're still winning this. Like, he was a guy that was instrumental in winning that Super Bowl. Other guys, yeah, sure, they played just as well as he did, but taking on the leadership role as well to help propel that team. Like, I don't think they win a Super Bowl without Malcolm Jenkins, in all honesty.
No, they
don't. That's how important I think he is to this franchise's history. And when you talk about the 6 years, only 6 years, but it's not like he had a cup of coffee. Like, the greatest wide receiver I've ever seen play for the Eagles is Terrell Owens. But, I mean, only playing a season and a half for the Eagles, I can't look at a guy and go, oh, yeah, definitely, you know, retire his number. He was here for a short period. 6 years isn't all that short. It's not the 10 or 11 years that Jason Peters might have played or the 13 years with Donovan McNabb or anything like that. But it's still a very significant portion of time with the Eagles and a great transition, considering the coach that he actually helped win a Super Bowl wasn't even his coach or defensive coordinator at the time he was brought here to Philadelphia. He went through the whole Chip Kelly transition and also helped keep this defense afloat as they were transitioning with Jim Schwartz. So I have to say, even though it's only, quote unquote, 6 years, you have to have more representation, especially on the defensive side of things, with a guy that galvanized the locker room and helped this team win their first Super Bowl in their history. So I know it's a little outside the box, it's a little off the beaten path, but I actually agree with Jalen Mills that I would hang that number up.
Sorry.
That's a compelling argument. That's a very compelling. Well, it's a very compelling rebuttal.
We all know what he did in the community, and that was great. And you talk about the
About the community.
No. I didn't say you did. And bringing guys together in the locker room and all that. And yeah, that's all well and good. But if he was like a 6-time Pro Bowler, if he was an unbelievable, you know, you can watch games, and this is why I always refer to Trey on this. Like, all right, was he any kind of a difference maker like this year, last year, defensively? And those are only two of his 6 years, you know? Like, he was a guy that played every down, and I'm not downplaying it at all. But was he a difference maker on defense, or was he a guy that they could rely on all the time on defense? I think for more than a couple of years, he was probably just that. So I just don't think he's Hall of Fame worthy. I mean, you say they wouldn't have won the Super Bowl without him. They wouldn't have won the Super Bowl without Halepuli Vaitai replacing Jason Peters. You know,
that's
they wouldn't. You know, like,
kiss up to Trey, an offensive lineman.
It's true.
Yeah, he knows it. But, yeah, I just don't think he's worthy of having his number retired now.
All right. Well, the question is out there, Sam. Let's make it official. What is our Twitter poll today?
Today we're asking everybody else, should the Eagles retire Malcolm Jenkins' number? Yes or no? We already have just under 800 votes. 83%
say yes.
No.
Oh, come on.
Oh.
Ridiculous.
In your face, Mark.
Take
boom.
Wow, look at all you guys hating Malcolm Jenkins. All right, new poll question. Why does everyone on the show except me hate Malcolm Jenkins? Yes,
I love Malcolm.
Yeah,
I think
whatever.
He's awesome.
It doesn't show.
Is Mike Quick's number retired?
Nope.
Is Harold Carmichael's number retired? You know, the guy's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, the guy's a Hall of Famer.
Literally.
In September.
A Hall of Famer.
Yeah, in September, which is the stupid that they're holding that ceremony. Ceremony, right. Quote unquote.
No,
in
I mean, I think Ring of Honor is more than fine for Malcolm. I don't think you need to retire 27. That would be the
middle of the road question that I refuse to ask. We'll get into a little bit later. Now, here's the other thing. And I'm still looking for people's good vibes here. I'm still looking on a day where it's opening day. We're supposed to be basking in the glory that is opening day and going to the ballpark. Like today, the Phillies were supposed to be in Miami taking on the Marlins, right? And we're going to be talking about, oh, has Reese Hoskins turned it around? Is his swing back to normal? Is he going to be pressing as much as he looked like he was in the second half of last season? Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler in the starting rotation for this team. What's Mr. Tight Pants going to be doing for himself as a third starter in this rotation? But all that is all for naught. And I know that there's a lot more going on in the world, but in the sports world, There's a day that's my favorite day of the year that's pushed aside for a great reason, obviously. I'm not arguing that opening day should have happened by any means. Baseball and all the other sports are doing the right thing and pushing everything back as they should. But it's just one day that I can usually rely on opening day no matter what to be the most optimistic sports day of the year for me. Everybody's in first place, all that stuff, right? But what is your, to keep those good vibes going, regardless of no baseball or having baseball, to keep those good vibes going, what is your all-time favorite sports memory? It could be personal. It could be something that you did share with an entire fan base. Trey talked about his favorite sports memory, just getting drafted to the Eagles. Remember that, Trey? That was a good time.
Oh, yeah, another one. Good time. Yeah, I have another one now. Because now, after I got drafted, I just had to go back and look at our 98 schedule. And I'm like, you know what? I played against Chad Brown my first game. That was against the Seahawks. And then I had Chuck Smith in Atlanta. And then I had Simeon Rice in Arizona. But then the game that really – yeah, man, that's my first three games as a rookie. And then the creme de la creme going up against Derek Thomas. And that game right there made me feel like, all right, I got this. I can be a pro here. You know, wow. Just being able to link up against Derek Thomas just because of who he was as a rusher, a guy that was that has the record as the most sacks in the game, and to go out there and shut him down was kind of like, all right, you know what? Let's go.
I belong?
Yeah, I belong here.
Chad
Brown, Chuck Smith, Simeon Rice, and then Derek Thomas. My first four games as a pro.
You know what's interesting, Trey? What's wild is, like, you knew you belonged from the minute you stepped on football because you have that confidence and you were that damn good, all right? Mm-hmm. You knew that. But the whole other thing that we always focus on, like, when an athlete knew they would be good enough to make it, you know what I mean? But what about the moment an athlete knew he could be elite at that level? That sounds like the moment it clicked for you.
Mm-hmm.
That was
definitely it. That was it. You know, because I remember after the Atlanta game, walking off and talking to Chuck Smith, like, hey, man, what do I need to work on, you know, as a rookie? And he was like, man, okay, you know what? I really don't want to tell you this, but when you're in your stance, your butt drops right before you get ready to take off. So I had to focus on my stance. Like, all right, I need to change that because that was my trigger. And so he would just wait for my butt to drop and then he would just go. You know, so then I was like, all right, Juan, this is what we need to work on. This is what Chuck Smith told me. So we got to work on keeping my stance a little bit more balanced so I don't have to drop my butt. So we just kept building from there and then having to deal with Simeon Rice, awkward ass, man. I mean, he was a beast.
I want to get more on that in a minute. But, Bob, you also talked about covering a Special Olympics event, which sounded awesome. Jamie being at the NFC Championship game in 2017. Sam ripped her pants on a fence once. So we got some great stuff going on there as well for Best Sports Member. We got Danny from Burlington. But when we come back, we're going to go down memory lane a little bit more with the Eagles here because I know this is something, for whatever reason, whenever it gets brought up, it's always, they talk about a hot button issue. This is always something that people are still trying to get behind and make happen. We'll talk about it in a second for the Eagles here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning. The Fanatic.
Coming up in a little over an hour, we're going to talk to Charlie Manuel. Speaking of good vibes, it'd be great to talk to Charlie on what should have been opening day. I know he was down there for the abbreviated spring training. It looks like Major League Baseball is going to have another spring training if and when they do start up the actual regular season. We got some numbers for you, some proposals, some theories as to how many games this Major League Baseball season could be given the delay. Major League Baseball's Commissioner Manfred is saying that he hopes they can start this up by the middle of May. But I always say, I'm saying this, I'll say it until the seasons actually start and whenever they have a confirmed date. We're all just hopeful in terms of these dates. They're very vague starting dates. It depends on, obviously, what state the world is in right now with a pandemic going on. So we'll continue to follow that along with you guys as the as this all continues. But it'll be great to talk to Charlie as he was down there for spring training, getting to see what Rhys Hoskins was doing different with his swing, getting to see what kind of different camp Joe Girardi was running versus Gabe Kapler. And also, going from competing against a guy like Joe Girardi in a World Series in 2009 to now being a guy that's wearing the same jersey as him when Charlie's on the field helping people out. You know what I actually forgot with all that went on? Charlie was the hitting coach at the end of last season. Like, I forgot that had happened, that they brought him down. I was like, oh, wow, that's right. Well, great. I remember the first game he was the hitting coach. I think they scored 11 runs, and Bryce Harper went over with a cup of water to Charlie and said, hey, you know, thanks for all your influence, basically. Like, this is what you have brought to the table already.
Well, last Philly season feels like 5 years ago already.
Everything,
I mean, the NBA's been, what, 2.5 weeks? And it feels like a year ago.
Just this morning, early this morning, he was probably up playing Call of Duty. Ben Simmons tweeted out how much he missed the game. And I was like, yeah, I think we're all there. I miss sports. See, you mentioned baseball seems like 5 years ago. Monday seems like 5 years ago right now. But some great things we'll get into with Charlie, including his own health. Great to see Charlie doing as well as he is doing right now. He had surgery, and then there was an infection afterwards that required him to be in the hospital for an extended amount of time than he certainly expected. So we'll talk to Charlie at about 8:30 today. But here's the thing. Trey, I want you to touch on that a little bit more in terms of your introduction to the NFL and the competition you had standing right in front of you as to whether or not that you were, you know, basically whether or not you were going to belong in the league, but whether or not you were going to be an elite player. That's some stiff competition standing in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was, Juan just came in and just trained the heck out of this. I mean, first on the field, last off the field, and just being able to go up against the guys that I had to go up against my first 4 or 5 games, it was an eye opener, and it kind of helped me, you know, especially even coming from college when I had two of the guys that I came in with, Renard Wilson, Peter Bowl, were both first round draft picks and went on to have heck of careers. Andre Wadsworth was a walk on for us. It ended up being one of the highest draft picks coming out of Florida State, you know, up until Jameis Winston came through. So, you know, it was, that kind of prepared me. And then coming in, Juan just drilling me to death. And then, you know, if I go back and look at some of those games, I'm probably like would just cringe at the technique and all of that, but you know, but it just was what it was. It was a challenge. And then once I went out there against Derek Thomas, knowing who he was and what he meant to this game and being that type of rusher that he was, it kind of helped me with that confidence that, all right, hey, you know what, everybody else, y'all in trouble.
Trey, how long did it take you to go from like getting into a training camp and learning and doing something better, as opposed to getting to training camp and having all that and just fine tuning it? Did it ever come like that?
Well, it was fine tuning. It was like why, because it was a continuation from college, I think, that because I had a good coach in college, and I had to learn the offensive line position because I came in as a defensive end. I played high school as a defensive end, and all through college, I was I was red shirted, and then they had me doing like scout team offensive line stuff. So it took me a couple years to really learn the position. I really didn't get a lot of playing time until my junior year at Florida State, and then I started my senior year, and then that was it. So then it was a continuation of just kind of the kick step, the technique, and then just the way Juan was, just focusing on posture, punch, and just making sure that the stance was right and all of that other stuff, and then we just kept grinding.
All right, coming up in a minute,
looking up your old draft class, Trey. Mm-hmm. I totally forgot you were part of the Peyton Manning, Ryan Leaf draft.
Yeah.
that was that year. That's pretty wild to look back on.
You did a lot better than one of those guys, and then around the same as the other. Let's just say that. And I know they went before you, but coming up in a minute, we're going to jump on the phone here, but we're going to get into this Kelly Green jersey thing because I know a lot of people are still clamoring for this, and I am too. And I know people always say that only reminds you of a losing era. In all honesty, the most successful period of time in the Eagles' history. What, three championships was it in 11 years? They were wearing the Kelly Green. Not that I was around in 1948 and 49, but still, I respect the Eagles' history. So we'll talk about that in a minute. Let's get to Danny in Burlington. Danny, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Danny?
Hey, what's up, guys? You guys are awesome. Mark, you're like the best media guy in Philly right now.
That's very nice of you. Thanks, brother.
Of course. I actually wanted to talk on something else, but you guys just brought up that Kelly Green thing. I mean, if you're Lori, how do you not? I mean, you would have to be deaf to not realize that you could put like a type, like even like a modern twist on it, but it's so good. It's like, how do you not do that yet?
It's the point right now where it's actually the better business decision. I'm not saying you need to blow out the midnight green. But think about it. The retro jersey. I mean, how many did they sell just wearing it once?
You would sell a million new jerseys. And if the Steelers can trot out in that, like, checkered sock, ugly uniform, yes. Then we can, you know, rock the Kelly Green. But anyway, I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts on Alshon Jeffrey because, like, it seemed like he just did a complete 360 as far as, like, the fan base kind of, like, turning their back on him where – I mean, it seems like the longer he stays on this team, you know, it seems like he's going to be here for this season. He had a foot injury, and I also wanted to see what you guys thought about these draft guys because Jalen Reagor is a stud that we could probably get in like a second or third round, hopefully. But I know Jamie's got these wide receivers out of Alabama, and I'm just trying to see which one that he like.
Jalen Reagor, he's
awesome. Like yeah, I think the Eagles like him a lot too. I wouldn't be. I don't think he'll be there in the second round, though. I think he's a first round pick, or probably you're not going to get him.
Jamie, that's what I was thinking too, man. I was kind of thinking maybe like late first. But do you think that they would possibly look at him in the first round if like the other?
Yeah,
like
yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think he's a guy, if you wanted to, you could possibly trade back and still get maybe at like 27, 28 and maybe try to pick up like an extra third or fourth. I think he's definitely a guy on their – yeah, I love Ruggs. I love the big three. Any of those top three I'm in love with for the Eagles.
So if Ruggs, Lamb, Jefferson, and Judy are all gone at 21, do you trade back and hope to get
– Reagor will be the pick.
Do you trade back?
I'd have to see what the teams behind me are looking for. You really have to have a good sense of where other teams are going with this.
Yeah. Jamie, do you have faith in Roseman to make this pick this year, man?
I do, just because the wide receiver class is so strong.
I don't know, man. I'm really hoping that they nail this draft.
They have to.
Just give me a stud wide receiver. That's all I ask out of this draft. If they don't go wide receiver in the first round, is there any other position that you guys think that they could be looking at for first round?
I hope not.
I mean, if a cornerback falls.
Yeah, the corner is another one. There. Yeah, they're loaded at that point right now. Thanks for the call, man. I appreciate the kind words, Danny. Thanks for calling in, and good luck to you and all the madness. Oh, Danny, last thing for you. Do we still have Danny? Oh, did we let him go? All right, I forgot to ask him his sports memory. But the other thing is, I know safety is still a position they're going to be looking at, and this might be the year. After they take a wide receiver, maybe after they take a safety, do they go linebacker? Do they actually draft somebody that's played linebacker? Do they consider that in their top three picks?
I think third round
I knew it.
But I don't think they're going to spend either of the first two.
But I saw that conversation start up yesterday about trading back in the draft. No way. Like, you would have to blow this team out of the water with an incredible offer to have them move back. No, like, I, it's not about filling roster spots at this point. It's about getting the best possible player available. And if I see him trade back in the first round, now I understand there's, you're going to see how it falls with guys like Henry Ruggs and CeeDee Lamb and those guys in the draft. If those guys are off the board, then I still want to take the next best wide receiver available. Whoever that might be, go ahead and get them. If they don't trade up, the last thing I want to see them do is trade out.
I agree with you there, and I'm convinced that if they don't get one, or if one of the big three go early, or a couple of the wide receivers go really early, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they trade up, like Jamie said, maybe 13 with San Francisco, who needs more picks, if they trade up to try to get either Ruggs or Lamb or Judy.
Mm. Yeah, you got Lamb, fun fact, Judy, Ruggs, yeah.
Yeah, a little fun fact about Montez.
I think we lost
for a second.
But Monte Rager is his father.
Who's this? What's that?
You went out. We got a little technical. We're all at our home bunkers. You know, things are going to happen from time to time. But we're all doing fine.
Real quick, Mark. I want to ask Trey. Like, we know the offensive line. We know what happened with Jason Peters. And you hope Dillard can get in there and all. Are you satisfied with the depth there? Because I'll tell you what, I keep looking and looking and looking at this depth chart. I'm really nervous about that offensive line depth.
Yeah, that's concerning a little bit, just because you don't – who's going to be your swing guy? I mean, are you going to be looking at Fryer? You know, if Lane or if Dillard goes down, what's going to be the answer? Because Vitae is gone. JP, you know what? You might have JP come back.
He's going to be back. If his name's not even tied to any rumors right now.
No, I think mentioned Tampa Bay. And that's about it.
That's it. I have a feeling he's going to be back. I really do.
Well, at least he'll be on the cheap.
Yeah, so you might be getting Jason Peters back, but that still doesn't fix who's going to be your swing tackle. Because I don't think Jason Peters is going to be your swing tackle to say, all right, man, we need you to go over there on the right side when he hasn't been in a right-hand stance in, what, 15 years? I don't think that's flying.
Trey, what do you think about Matt Pryor from what you've seen? Because I think the whispers out of there are that they like him to step into that swing tackle role.
Yeah, you know what? When I watched him a little bit, I need to go back over the games again. That's one of the things I'm going to do since I have a little bit more time now. Just go back through the games. You know, but just when I think back to what game was that he had to step in for Brandon and, you know, and hold it down for
Seattle,
a little bit.
I believe.
Yeah, against Seattle. He did okay, but there are some times where he gets a little too overextended with his punch. Like he tries to. He doesn't understand that the punch is a 6-inch punch. It's not a knockout blow where you're trying to lunge and give him everything you have. It's just a quick pop. So, you know, it's something that he just needs to continue to work on. I'm going to go back and watch some more of his games and just see his footwork, see his technique, and see what needs to be worked on. But to me, it seems like he was just a little bit off balance where he started lunging. And if you get out there against some athletic DNs, that'll make you force a movement out of you. Because to me, a good pass rush is forcing a reaction. And if you have an offensive tackle that lunges or tries to give you that knockout punch, then you force a reaction, you have a counter, and then he's beat.
All right. Trey, the other thing here, and that's people are tweeting us like you should be coaching some of these guys, and I'm not, as long as we still have you, I'm all for it, buddy. but one of the other things that that came up here about Jason Peters, and I saw this when one of the reports came out that, oh, maybe he'll go to Tampa Bay to link up with Tom Brady and be a part of that offense and all that. One of the things that got mentioned was how he's comfortable, and I thought of you immediately, Trey, how he's comfortable with moving from the left side to the right side.
Who said he's comfortable?
That was just one of the reports. I want to say it was Lewis Riddick that put it out, saying that he would move from the left side to the right side if Tampa Bay asked him to do that. Now, I remember he came out and said that after the game Dillard started at right tackle and said, well, you know, I would gladly move over there. And we were all like, oh, well, yeah, after the fact, you say it. Where was that beforehand? So if he is willing to get, I don't know, that last big paycheck, or if he's willing to get that, if he wants that last big paycheck, he might be willing to move over to the next side. But do you think that would be the wrong thing to do at this point?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, okay, so now it could work possibly because he has an entire offseason to work on it. You know, so it's not something that you want to do mid-season. You know, now you have the entire offseason to work on it and get used to being on the right side. It could possibly work, but man, if you go back to any, if you just do anything just out of muscle memory, that could be a problem. Mm-hmm. You know, because just think about, okay, as an offensive tackle, when you're talking about, okay, you're on the left-handed side and not even getting into the footwork, the hands part of it, but just the footwork part of it, you always want to be in a staggered stance where your left foot is back and your right foot is up. So even if you work outside, your left foot is back, right foot is up. If you go back inside, that right foot still needs to be up, left foot back. Say if he goes over to the right side. And he's a right tackle. And just out of instinct, he drops that left foot and puts his right foot up. He opens the lane to the quarterback. You see what I'm saying? So just even with just that footwork creates a problem if he goes back to muscle memory. When people ask, why is it so difficult for tackles to switch? It's because the footwork. And then if you start throwing hands into it, man, you mess around and throw your outside hand, you know, at the wrong time. There you go. That's another sack. So there are things that needs to happen. If with them having the entire offseason to work on it, possibly. But, man, it's been 15 years in the left-handed stance, and it's not as easy as everybody thinks it is.
Yeah, just a quick punch up here on Twitter just to see if his name's been linked anywhere. The only common team that I see here is the Redskins in terms of discussing a one-year deal with Jason Peters, but nothing concrete, but that's just the latest name that came up.
Trent Williams has to get out of there again. He has to get out. So, you know, they're going to be looking for help on that offensive line. Here's real quick, Mark, if he comes back, will he possibly come back as a backup? I mean, if they say, yeah, we want you to come back, but we're going to put
I'm fine with
there.
That.
Yeah, is he?
Yeah, I don't think Jason Peters is fine with that.
Right. I don't think what argument
would he have? No one else wants him.
Hey, Hall of Fame tackle, we need you to come back. Yeah. We're going to retire your number. Yes, you're worthy of having your number retired, but we need you to back up.
Yes.
He's not doing that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. And then also, too. He's the type of player, man, he's been used to playing. You mean to tell me you're going to bring somebody like Jason Peters off the bench if something goes on?
Yeah.
You're going to bring him in at the end of the game. Like, say if you got the game, this team on lock, you got the win on lock, and you want to pull guys out to start resting them. You're going to pull Dillard out and send Jason Peters out there?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yes.
That's weird.
No, you're not. No.
Why not?
Because he's a Hall of Fame tackle that you're about to retire his jersey.
Yep. He's
no, you're not going to do that. No,
he was a Hall of Fame left tackle, and now he's a backup left tackle. If no other team wants to bring him in, how do you bring him in? I am not having Jason Peters as my starting left tackle next year. Andre Dillard is my starting left tackle. If you can bring back Jason Peters and he wants to be a backup and cash that check, by all means, go for it. But you got to move on as a franchise. And yeah. I would love to – look, he's already talked to – he's already, Andre Dillard credited Jason Peters. Jason Peters went on the road last year for Andre Dillard, I believe, his first start, just to be there as a coach for the rookie at left tackle. I would love to still have him on the team, but it's got to be Andre Dillard's position to lose.
I agree with the
respect in the world. I know it's weird. I know it's a tough decision, but I think that's what the Eagles would have to do if he does come back to Philly.
I agree with you that you have to have Dillard as your starter. My only thing is if Jason Peters isn't going to start for the Eagles and nobody else wants him, his choice is either retirement or be a backup, and I would assume that he'll lean towards retirement.
Or he could play guard.
He's been open to that in the past, and look, if he's willing to if the conversation I heard has any credence of him entertaining the idea of moving to the right side. I don't know if it goes to the next step of playing guard. I know years ago he said if he wanted to keep his career going, he'd move to the inside. And Trey, we've talked about that at length. We'll talk about it a little bit later as well. But I don't know if he's willing to take that next step. And now, if it's be a starter at guard or be a backup at left tackle, then maybe he would opt to be a starter. But we'll talk about that transition a little bit later. Starting next year, I think Andre Dillard has to be your starting left tackle. Now, we didn't get to it in this segment. We're going to get to it in the next one here. Some Eagles fans have been clamoring for that Kelly Green. Once again, it seems like at least once or twice a year now, a new quarter gets put in the hope machine to bring back that color. First off, do you still care? And whenever we ask that question, it always seems like people still care about it. But one of the things that Jeffrey Lurie said was a reason they haven't been able to go back to it. Looks like it's getting shot down at the NFL level. We'll talk about that in a second here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning. The Fanatic.
Coming up 8:30, we'll speak to Charlie Emanuel on what's with everything in context, obviously, going on in our world today. Well, looking at it like that, with people kind of reacting to not having opening day today, everything in context, how weird it must be for a guy who's a baseball lifer like Charlie Emanuel to not have opening day, especially after what might be a little bit of a tease of actually going to spring training, starting up, playing games, getting to see a little bit of your regular rotation, getting to see a little bit of your regular lineup, and how different it must be right now to really not know when baseball could be returning. Now, as promised, in this segment, I want to get to the Kelly Green jerseys and the new news that surrounds that. But our dear friend, Adam Schefter, who proposed this idea with us around 7:30 yesterday, so almost exactly 24 hours ago, of a new draft, is being beat up right now by a website, by a Twitter account, by a social media account that I greatly respect. And Jamie, I know you like the Bro Bible website. They do a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, I just
saw
that link.
What the hell, man? They're beating up Schefter for his idea.
And the thing with Schefter is, you know, not to say that this isn't an original idea of his, but he is one to put things out under the guise of...
It's just an idea.
You know, maybe this is my... Yeah, it's an idea, but that idea has some educational information behind it. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if this actually was discussed in league circles.
You don't think this just came off the top of his head yesterday, Jane?
No, I don't think so, Bob. I don't think so.
Okay.
Bob, I know you're in that same school. I know that. Now, Trey, let me ask you this. You played in the Midnight Green, right? And the Kelly Green is kind of always been there, if not worn. It's been in the background, in the back of people's minds. Would you care if the Eagles went back to Kelly Green as a more full-time jersey?
Not really.
Now, if they used it as an alternate jersey, would you care? Would you think it was cool?
Yeah, I think it would be cool as an alternate.
Yeah, that's, I think, all most people are really asking for. They'd like to see that throwback. And you know what? People were tweeting about the old Sixers Iverson era jersey. And you know what? It wasn't my favorite thing, and I loved when they went back to the old school Sixer jersey that they wear now most of the time. But I'll tell you, I wouldn't mind seeing that Iverson-era jersey come back with the basketball swishing underneath Sixers in big, bold letters. You know, I actually like that jersey.
You hated that jersey.
Well, here's how you know, Bob, I guess you're getting, not you, me. This is how I know I'm getting old. The jersey of my youth, I want to see come back. Like, that's where it is for me now. Like, I would love to see Ben Simmons rocking that jersey, Joel Embiid rocking that jersey. Like, not as a regular thing, but as an alternate jersey. And if they go with the 76 jerseys written across the chest, right, so in front of the old convertible, why not go back to that Iverson era as well? Especially when you're talking about Ben Simmons having a poster of AI on his bedroom wall as a child with that jersey on as well. I think that'd actually be a pretty cool thing.
How many jerseys do the Sixers currently have running, though? It seems like they're wearing a different one almost every game.
Yeah,
they got
really.
The gray, the red, the blues, the whites. You got different designs, different... I can't even keep up with how many jerseys they already have. So if you want to throw that one into the mix, go ahead. I wasn't a huge fan of those. I kind of like the black. I wish they'd go like black and the blue with the filler or something like that. But
okay.
Scotty Rego, who's their equipment manager, was huge in bringing back this new old school unis that they have. He's been calling for it for a long time, and I think probably had something to do with the design of them, and I love them.
Okay. All right. I wouldn't mind. Actually, as opposed to just wearing a black jersey, if they're going to go with a black jersey, I'd rather them go back to the Iverson black jersey than anything else. But to go back to the Kelly Green for a second, one of the things, now, this is how this has gone. Oh, let's just go over like the last 5 years or so, okay? Jeffrey Lurie seems to get asked this question every year, And he goes, oh, man, I love that jersey. Let me tell you, that's a great jersey, and hopefully we'll go back to that. And I always think, yeah, right. Like, I don't think you even give a damn about the Kelly Green, and you don't like what came before you and whatever, and that's always been the argument that goes against Jeffrey Lurie and all that, or the argument people make for Jeffrey Lurie. Then you hear another player, and Jason Avant was the guy that I heard speak about this most bluntly. He flat out said the Lurie's hate Kelly Green. They will not go back to it. So then most recently, I believe it was at the last owners' meetings, Jeffrey Lurie said, yeah, we'd love to go back to it, but the only thing is, we put the request in to get the jersey and all that, but the only reason we really can't do it right now is because there's a two-year wait to get a new jersey, and there's a rule in the NFL, and this is the most important rule here, that you have to have one shell, one helmet. You can't have multiple types of helmets. You have to have one color, one type of helmet. So you cannot have that helmet not match the jersey. And, of course, the Eagles helmet is a midnight green helmet. The only thing that I find odd about this, Trey, you mentioned black jerseys. When you wear the black jersey, the Eagles wear that black jersey, the green trim around the neck is not the same shade of green as the green helmet. So it makes you think, well, what the hell's the argument here if you already have one helmet that doesn't match your jersey anyway? And he's saying, yeah, the Kelly green wouldn't look right with that other green helmet when already it doesn't match the current green that they have. I feel like they'll never go back to the Kelly green, even though they should, for at least the alternate jersey. Do people still care about this? Because I feel like this always gets attention. The rule in the NFL, and this was brought up by Bruce Arians most recently, and Bob, you mentioned the jersey itself. I don't know what you call it, the Sherbert color Tampa Bay Buccaneers jersey, whatever that is, that like pinkish jersey, that peach-ish jersey.
So, yeah. It's like a orange sickle.
Yeah.
Bruce Arians said that they eventually want to go back to that when the NFL lifts this one shell rule in 2021. I guess it has something to do with safety for the helmet and all that. But he says the NFL is going to be changing that rule, not this coming season, but the following season. And that's where you could actually see the Kelly Green jersey come back in at least an alternate capacity. Trey, I don't know where you sit on this. I would love it. I think it's a great thing. Look, in my time of watching the Kelly Green, watching Randall Cunningham, that was real my first exposure with the Kelly Green. That's where I went, wow, this game of football is pretty awesome. So for you, as a guy who wore that midnight green, what would you think if they went back to, in some capacity, the Kelly Green?
Yeah, I'm okay with the Kelly Green as an alternate jersey. If it's a different changeup every now and then, you bring it out, and it has the helmet to match, because that's what makes it look the way it does when you have the helmets to match with the jersey, silver pants and all that. The way they did it that one year when they did it, that's how you want to bring it back. But you know, with it only being one shell rule, I mean, it is what it is. You have to go with what they have. I personally prefer the black jersey. I thought it was slendering, you know, so it was cool for me.
look chic. Very, very chic. Yeah. I remember Connor Barwin saying he felt faster in the black jerseys when they had the 27-0 win on Sunday night against the Giants. He said he felt faster in the black jersey. Now, Bob, this is the only time I would ever not argue against an I don't care, because I think some people fall in the I don't care. I just don't see the negative of going back to it. Why not?
Yeah, and you know what? For some reason, this fan base has really tied themselves to Kelly Green. I mean, they've been calling, like you said, Mark, it's like a subject that won't die. And I'm not a big uniform guy. You guys know, I don't do jerseys. And I told you before, I could cover a Sixers game, go write about the game, in particular plays, and not remember what color jerseys they wore. I just don't pay much attention to that. But that being said, I love, love, love the Kelly Green jerseys. I wish they would bring it back.
Jamie, we didn't grow up in an era where that was, you know, we grew up in an era where it was prevalent and then it quickly went away. So we went through the transition in our most pure form of fandom. When you think back to that jersey, is it something the Eagles should bring back?
Yes, they should. I grew up, you know, the Reggie and Clyde and Jerome and Seth and Eric Allen. That's the team I fell in love with. And that's what they were wearing back then. And, You know, I love that silver as the pairing to the Kelly green. I just think the helmet is awesome. You know, every year this conversation seems to come up again, and I don't think it's ever going to happen. I think we need to be realistic about that. But, yeah, I don't see why it shouldn't happen.
From a business standpoint, it's another jersey to sell. Look, as I mentioned earlier, look how many you sold 10 years ago.
Lori would literally be printing money if they got re-released, but... I mean, because
isn't
of that
he
alone,
already?
You have to think. Well, yeah, he is. But because of that alone, you have to realize it's not coming back. You know, because why wouldn't he want money? That just tells you how much they don't like it there. I think they view it as the old regime of ownership and the franchise, and they've turned the page, and that's behind them. And I just don't ever see it coming back.
I totally agree with you. I think that they. Jeffrey Lurie is, I am the Kelly Green, or the Midnight Green era. And, you know, when people look at highlights of that, they'll think of me as the owner. I agree with you on that one.
All right, real quick, before we jump back into some baseball conversation here and what today means to a lot of people and what it's supposed to mean to a lot of people with the Phillies, they were supposed to open up opening day today. They were supposed to have opening day today for the Phillies and Marlins in Miami.
So sad.
Yeah, we'll talk about what they're doing in lieu of. I don't know how many people will watch this. We'll get into it in a second here. But real quick, yesterday, Adam Schefter joined us and proposed this draft idea about what they should do with this draft this year. We know this, it's going to be different, but Adam Schefter proposed this idea with us yesterday morning.
Why not have one round of the draft every day for seven straight days? And so while you are having teams that are in their apartments, their homes, teleconferencing in, so with that, when they're on the clock, which this may be the case for the draft, they may be in their homes drafting or, you know, something like that. And it's complex, and teams may need more time on the clock to execute trades when there's big deals going on. So why not give every team more time on the clock? Why not make the first day of the draft the first round, the second day the second round, the third day the third round, and so on and so forth, and go seven straight nights, sort of like the Hanukkah of NFL drafts. one crazy night for each night of the draft.
Brilliant idea. Love the idea. We put it to a vote. 83% of our voting audience said, damn right, you better do this. What the hell else are we going to watch as sports fans? There's no games going on. Make the draft. Give me a draft round every single night for a week. I'm in. I do it. Monday through Sunday, absolutely I'm doing that. Here it is, one of the websites that I absolutely love, brobible.com, calls Adam Schefter's idea the worst idea in the history of ideas. They pull no punches. Where is the...
That's a little dramatic.
Where's the... Yeah. I really... You think, yeah, now
there's a lot of bad decisions in the world.
I don't know. Licking the urinal, that was definitely one of the worst ones.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
I mean, the Holocaust was a pretty bad decision.
Yeah, that was a pretty bad decision,
Awful to go in that realm. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, so let's not say it's the worst decision ever.
Yeah.
What is their reasoning, Mark? I didn't read it.
The reason is all this, like, the people that don't know any better, I guess, the people that don't get what's going on, they it's all the same BS. The same hot take, not thinking as deep as they should be thinking here. Oh, the draft's already long enough. Oh, yes, I realize that. Any other year there's not a pandemic going on where we don't have other sports to watch, for instance. Like, people forget they put the combine, literally, guys working out. They put those guys on TV to see how many times they can bench press 225 pounds, see how fast they can run 40 yards. They watch, that's on TV every single year, and nobody says boo. They want to put the draft on that actually, right out of the gate, affects NFL teams. Transactions happen. There's twists, there's turns. Even in the fifth or sixth round, people are making trades. This is something that I think the NFL should absolutely do. There is zero negative to it. And anybody that's arguing, oh, the draft's long enough, yeah, I understand that any other normal year, but when we're going through the abnormality that we're in right now, and we are craving sports, and people have a thirst for sports that they just can't quench, this is a great way to at least take a nice sip of Gatorade during this, while everyone's thirsting for sports. This is just a great idea. I don't see any negative whatsoever in having the draft drawn out, as some people are calling it, for the sake of giving you, four more nights of entertainment? It's like a no-duh decision. It seems like it should be a lot easier than what people are trying to make it out to be. It's not a normal year. Normally, yeah, I disagree with you. But right now, when there's nothing else on as far as sports go, and I'm watching, you know, sporting events from 20 years ago just to relive classic moments, yeah, why not? I'll go ahead and accept the NFL draft being a week long. Is there any negative, yeah, Bob?
Real simple. Like, are you going to lose viewership because of doing it this way? I mean, just look at it the opposite way. Nobody watches the sixth and seventh round anyway. Okay, if nobody watches it, does that mean less people than nobody are going to watch it if you have it on its own night? I don't think so. You know, just look at it that way. I think it's a no-brainer. I agree with you.
Yeah, Trey, no-brainer? Easy to do?
Yeah, I'm good with it.
It's almost too easy.